All right, everyone, welcome back. It's time to resume Hot Topics. So glad everyone is still here. Thank you, Janet. Thank you, Jennifer.
Okay, so body image. Body image is our next topic. My name is Jennifer C., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. And something that I also consider myself recovered from is an obsession with my weight, an obsession with my appearance. Body image is defined by how I feel about my body, how I feel about my image, my body, even my face is part of my body image, and how those feelings and those thoughts affect my entire life. And that used to be the central focus of my whole world. Food and weight, how I was doing with food, and you know, whether I was trying to lose weight to compensate for my last binge, and that was my motivation for being abstinent. That used to be the central fact of my life. And the reality for me today is that I recognize that that's all part of my disease convincing me that if I just have this, I'll be fulfilled. If I just have this, I'll be happier. If I just lose 10 pounds, if I just lose 20 pounds, then I'll be happier. I'll be more fulfilled. I'll be more loved. And the reality is that on page 61 in the big book, it says, is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if he only manages well, if she only looks better, if she only weighs a certain number, if she only looks a certain way? And my disease will use everything I don't think I have yet, something I don't think I have, something that I think I need. My disease will use whatever that is to promise me that if I just had that, I would be okay. And body image is one of those promises. And it's a chasing after the wind. And we all know what that feels like, right? To chase after a number, to get there, maybe get there for a minute, realize that it doesn't deliver. It doesn't deliver what you thought it was going to feel like. And then going back to the food because it didn't satisfy. So when I come into this program, I learn that for me, as a compulsive overeater, everything has to become spiritual, including my weight, including the way that I perceive my body. It now becomes something that I offer to God as well, right? So step three, made a decision to turn my will and my life, made a decision to turn my food and my weight over to the care of God. Freedom for me came when I went through a long period of time where my abstinence was no longer a guaranteed weight loss. For years, I knew if I get abstinent, I'll lose weight. And that was a motivation for me to get abstinent because I knew that I would lose weight. God allowed me to go through a long period of time where, for whatever reason, being abstinent was not guaranteeing weight loss anymore. And there's a few lines in the big book that tell a story of a man who had lost his family and he was given his family back too soon. His family came back to him too soon. And essentially it says that because it was too soon, he lost his sobriety. And God really spoke to me through that because what I recognized was that every time that I had gotten to a certain point physically, I would break my abstinence. My motivation for being abstinent was largely for weight loss and for body image. And so in order to become free from that, God allowed me to go through that time where my abstinence became about connection to God. My abstinence and not eating compulsively became about spiritual growth, and it became about accepting my body and accepting myself, just where I was, as being exactly where I was supposed to be. It became spiritual. The number on the scale, where I was, wherever I was now something that I was offering up. It was something that I could no longer control, even through abstinence, right? Because abstinence was still something that I would use to try to control my food and my weight. And it was no longer working. And so I was forced into a place of complete and total surrender, where my body image, how I felt about my body, was no longer a central fact in my life. God started to teach me that that was just another illusion of this disease, promising me that getting to a certain place was going to deliver. And it never did. It never delivered the contentment, the confidence, even the serenity and the peace that I always thought that it would. It was an illusion, and it was a delusion that had to be smashed. Jennifer, that's not how you're going to get there, sweetie. That's not how you're going to get there. It doesn't deliver. It's a lie. It's another lie that has to be smashed. And for me, it was an idol. An idol is something in my life that takes God's place. And my physical appearance was something that became of most importance over time. It was a way for me to cope with my life, right? So I either go to the food as a distraction, or I put the food down and I immediately turn to the obsession with losing weight. And what hindered my recovery for so many years was that as soon as I was abstinent, it was still about controlling my weight. I wasn't eating all my food on my food plan because I didn't want to completely let go of the number. Freedom comes when we fully surrender, and we fully surrender to a God who we know loves us, cares about us, and has our best interest at heart. Really, truly letting go and trusting that God's ways are so much better than my ways. And during that time when I wasn't losing weight through abstinence, I was able to really understand that who I was, how I treated people, how I showed up in this world, and even how I felt about myself have very little to nothing to do with what I think I look like, the number on the scale, the size of my pants, right? My life today is about doing God's will. I offer my food and my weight over to the care of God, and I let God make me beautiful. And I know that sounds almost corny for a second, but the truth of the matter is that my heart's desire really truly did become, God changed me from the inside out. It was always outside in, right? This disease has us obsessed with food and obsessed with how we can change our bodies. And the freedom comes when we really truly believe that God's way of eating, God's way of living, and wherever God wants my body to be at any given point. And I really truly believe, yes, for that period of time when the scale wasn't moving, that was God's will. It's no longer just a scale. It's no longer just food. This all becomes spiritual when I begin this spiritual experience, when I begin this work. My food is no longer just food. It's something I offer up. My weight is no longer just a number. It's something I offer up. It's something that I have to surrender because I'm not able to control any of it anymore. And the reality is that God wants us all free. God wants me free today. And freedom is God's will. Freedom from vanity and freedom from binging. Freedom from thinking that I need to control my weight. Freedom from thinking that if that scale just moves a little bit more, I'll feel better in my own skin. That's the lie, right? That's the lie. The peace and serenity come through surrender, through surrendering all of it, giving myself away, offering myself to God, doing God's will. Recovery becomes about being delivered one day at a time from the obsession and the bondage of self. So the step three prayer, God, I offer myself to you. I'm asking for triumph. I'm asking for victory. And I'm asking to be delivered from the bondage of self. That's my mantra. God, please deliver me from the bondage of self. My body is an instrument that God uses every day to do his will. And the wife that I am, the mother that I am, the friend that I am, the woman that I am, is no longer dependent on a number. That number enables me, my weight loss or not, whatever God decides for it to be at any given point. And I want to encourage you, wherever you are in that process of weight loss, because I know that some of us, we've obsessed about our bodies and we don't have much to lose, but it still feels really big. It still feels like a really big focus in our lives. Or you're someone who does have a lot to lose for health reasons. Wherever you are on that spectrum, for us as compulsive overeaters, it feels so big. It feels like a central focus in our lives. And that's what we're asking God to deliver us from. We're asking God to deliver us from the bondage of self. We're asking God to show us that our true identity is not in what we look like, because that's where the freedom is. That's where the love is. And wherever I am today is where I am. It's where I can grow. It's where I can receive the grace. It's where I can let God bring me to a new place. And if God hasn't allowed the weight loss for whatever reason, or if things feel stuck, just know that God knows what we're ready for. God knows what we're ready for. And so for me, body image and freedom from being obsessed with my body has literally become the difference between the central fact of my life being me, my appearance, the number on the scale, losing weight. Oh my gosh, I got to lose weight. Time to get abstinent again, because now I put weight on. So now I'm going to try to control my food through getting abstinent. And all of that, it has become the central fact of my life today is truly the presence of God, the power of God, needing God to do for me what I was never able to do for myself. Even if that means that for a period of time, my weight didn't budge. That was the best gift that God could have given me during that time, because my abstinence stopped being a diet and it started being something very spiritual and surrendered. So I set aside everything I think I know about my body. And I trust that God is using everything in my life, including my body weight. He will use everything in my life to make me better from the inside out, because the outside in never worked. It never delivered what I thought it would. It never can. It never will. And God's ways work one day at a time. So today it's about giving myself away. It's about offering myself. And we can all be free one day at a time as we surrender our food and our bodies to the care of God, trusting that He will get us where we need to be. Control doesn't work. That's what we surrender to in step one. I can't control this. I can't even be guaranteed that if I follow my food plan, I'm even going to get to where I think I need to be. There are no guarantees. But what I can do is I can trust God one day at a time. And when I turn my will and my life over, when I turn my food and my weight over, I'm trusting in a God who truly does care, has my back, and has the power to do for me what I cannot do for myself. And with that, I pass.
Thanks. Okay, last thing on our agenda today is relapse. How to avoid it, how to get out of it if it happens. There's a common misconception. Sometimes people say relapse is part of recovery. That is not in the big book. In fact, the big book says it is infinitely better that the man have no relapse at all, as has been true with many of us. So we don't have to go into relapse. And actually, sometimes what we call relapse is just ongoing non-recovery, right? That's what I had for 6.5 years, ongoing non-recovery. But relapse is someone making progress in the steps and then going back into the food. The only solution to compulsive eating that this program offers is being protected by God, right? Page 85 says, we feel we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. You know, I like to think back to like the middle school where we learned about like the serfs and the kings, and the king's got his land and he's a good king, and the serfs work the land, serve the king, and he protects them. When the invading army comes, you know, he calls his servants to pull up the drawbridges so that all the people on his land are safe and protected. But if one serf wanders off out of resentment or thinks he can do better on his own without a benevolent king to guide him and wanders off, when the invading army comes to attack, he's not on the king's land, safe and protected. Not because the king doesn't love him, but because he wandered off. But I believe our king, our God, is so good that not only does he keep us safe and protected, but if we wander off, he will launch a search and rescue mission for us to bring us back home. So for a compulsive eater, relapse is really the state of being outside of God's protection. And I found there's, I don't know, 16, 17, 18 things that lead us into relapse. So I'm just going to go through them, and then I'll talk briefly about if we find ourselves in that unfortunate position, how to get out of it. So the first thing is not moving ahead quickly enough in the steps. We are to move quickly. In fact, the book says the only step we're allowed to postpone is step 5 if a suitable person isn't there. So if our sponsor is away for a few days, we can postpone step 5, but otherwise we want to keep going quickly. Number 2, lack of humility. The minister's son, who they talk about in chapter 4, couldn't move ahead so long as he thought he had all the right answers. And remember what he said? He said, is it possible that all the religious people I've known in my life are wrong? So he's thinking, maybe I'm wrong about God. And that allowed him to have a spiritual experience. You know, a lot of people come in not believing in God. That wasn't me. I believed in God, but I was a practical agnostic. It made no difference to my life. It's like, I believe there's a king of England now. It makes no difference to my life. So I needed a real relationship with God, and we need humility for that. What happened for me is that I went to a meeting. I had been binging right before the meeting, stuffing bagel chips down my throat behind a locked bathroom door. I went to a meeting. I took a sponsor who I was a bit afraid of. Okay, a lot afraid of, but I knew this person had what I wanted. And when I was asked, what are you willing to do? I said, whatever you tell me. And I meant it. And then I went outside and I said a prayer. I said, God, I've always had fixed ideas of what you were like and how you wanted me to worship you. I'm willing to admit it's all wrong and just start over and let you show me what you're like and how to worship you. And really, it was at that moment that it was like his hand reached into my soul and yanked out the obsession. So I think we need the humility to think maybe what I'm doing isn't right. Number three, dishonesty. That will lead us into relapse. Probably. This program says it requires that we develop a manner of living built on rigorous honesty. So that means like no cheating on taxes, no cheating on husbands, no lying, no stealing. We are people who have to be rigorously honest. The book says that dishonesty creates fear and tension, and that leads to more drinking or binging. We can't lie to avoid consequences, and we certainly can't lie to our sponsors, because imagine going to a doctor, right? Like we had some bad rash or something. And the doctor says, so how's it going? We say, oh, it's fine. The rash has all disappeared, when it's actually spread. How is the doctor supposed to help us? Right. And actually, if we're not honest to our sponsors, we're stealing their time, because they get to decide if they want to keep working with us, if we're struggling with food or, you know, whatever it is. But if I'm not honest, I'm trying to control my sponsor and decide how she should spend her time. So it's not really right to do. Number four, talked about this before, not enough work and self-sacrifice for others, right? Bill Story says, we perfect and enlarge our spiritual life, not through more prayer, not through more meditation. Yes, obviously those things are super duper important, through work and self-sacrifice. On page 97 of the Big Book, it talks about what the founders of AA did. They gave up sleep. They had their fun time and their work time interrupted. It cost them money. They went on hospital visits. They had people stay at their house. Drunks smashed their furniture. Drunks burnt mattresses in their home. They had to fight with people. They had to administer sedatives. They had to call police and doctors. I don't think any of us are asked to do anything on that level. But basically, our lives shouldn't be as easy breezy as they'd be if we weren't working this program. It takes sacrifice. Next thing, number five, not working hard enough or fast enough on our fourth step. Yes, we have to work on quickly on all our steps, but the book uses very strong language in talking about our fourth step. It says on page 63 and 64 that we need to be launched. I love that word, like a rocket, launched on a course of vigorous action, not la-di-da, work on it 10 minutes a day. Vigorous action. And it tells us our third step will have no permanent effect. Guys, recovery can be permanent, but it says it won't unless followed at once by a strenuous effort to face and have removed what's been blocking us. Just as an aside, people sometimes say the food is what blocks me from God. Not true. Our self-will is what blocks us from God. And when we're blocked from God, the illness of compulsive eating can come in and do what it wants with us. So our job in the fourth step is to get down to causes and conditions. And what are the character defects? What are the resentments? What are the fears? What are the harms I've done to others that have blocked me from God? So we have to work hard and fast on this. And it says it's not fun. At the end of step four, it says, you've swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about yourself. When I swallow and digest some big chunks of truth about myself, it's not fun. It's painful, but it's necessary. Number six, not resolving resentments. On page 66, the Big Book is very specific in mentioning that this is dangerous. It says, when harboring resentments, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol, food, returns, and we drink, binge again. And with us, to drink or to binge is to die. That's how seriously they take this. And remember, our only solution is to be protected by God, harboring resentments. That means like being a safe place for them to hang out in shuts the door on God. I mean, we all get resentments, but we are obligated to resolve them quickly. Number 7, not seeking to play the role that God assigns us. This is on page 68. And I love this because it is a formula for how to have serenity all the time, no matter how much calamity is going on. It says, just to the extent that we do as we think He, God, would have us, and humbly rely on Him, does He enable us to match calamity with serenity? So it's like a formula. A units of doing what I think God would have me, plus B units of trusting and relying on God equals A, B units of serenity. I think I've got my high school algebra right. So my job is to seek to play the role that God assigns. With all the politics that are going on in the world, all, you know, the chaos at college campuses, what role does God have for me? I don't have to solve all the problems of the world. Sometimes it's to give money to a cause. It might be to volunteer with the cause. It might be to just pray. I have to seek to play the role God assigns me. And then I have serenity. So if we ever don't have serenity, we need to ask ourselves, not what's going on, like, oh, you know, my kids are noisy, my boss is mean. Where am I either not doing what I think God would have me? And where am I not trusting Him? Remember, if I'm not seeking to play the role that God assigns me, then I am playing God, and I am very underqualified for that job. Number 8, not living up to our sex ideal or harming others. This is on page 70 of the Big Book. The Big Book is very clear that if we fall down on our sex ideal and continue to harm others, we are quite sure to drink. That's what it says. So I don't think this is limited to a sex ideal. The main point is harm to others. So if I keep harming others and I'm not sorry and I keep doing it, it tells me my abstinence is in jeopardy. Number 9, not disclosing everything on our fifth steps, page 72, 73. Why do we even do a fifth step? Well, our book tells us if we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. So the Big Book clarifies that the reason some people get drunk is they never tell someone else their entire life story. They therefore don't learn the humility, fearlessness, and honesty that's required. So it's required that we keep no secrets. Now, that doesn't mean that we need to tell everyone everything about us. You know, I'm very cautious, especially if, like, let's say I have a resentment against my husband. You know, I have to be careful about being respectful of my husband. So I have a handful of people, my sponsor, my 10-step partner, a couple of other people I really trust that I'll talk to. And it tells us that before we do our fifth step, we think hard before we decide who to do it with, that someone understands what we're driving at, that can keep a confidence. So I don't call random people and like do 10 steps. I talk to people who I know, who I trust, who I feel comfortable talking to. And the Big Book tells me I have a right to do that. Number 10, not paying money we owe. Page 78, it says we must lose our fear of creditors no matter how far we've gone, for we are liable to drink if we are afraid to face them. By the way, I want to say that, you know, and I've talked to people sometimes where, you know, they've lost their abstinence and I try poke and prod and see, okay, what happened? And sometimes it's, I didn't make there's a couple of amends I didn't want to make. So what generally happens? They pick up, right? They start eating compulsively. Their sponsor fires them and tells them to get a new sponsor. And then with their new sponsor, they go perfectly through steps 1 through 8 and then pick up again and then do the 1 through 8 dance over and over. And at step 8, the sponsor says, well, I think you need to hear a new voice. So I say, you know, if you've got a sponsor or if you're a sponsor and you're working these steps, there's nothing wrong with your voice. I don't tell sponsees they need to hear a new voice if they pick up. I try to help them see where they're not working the program. So if someone, I have actually two people now who came to me and they were picking up, and I said, okay, and tried to figure it out. It's like, oh, some amends they didn't want to make. It's like, okay, I'll work with you, but we're not going to go back to the beginning. You need to get the amends made. It says, we must lose our fear of creditors no matter how far we have to go, for we are liable to drink, to binge, if we're afraid to face them. Number 11, letting up on our spiritual program of action and resting on our laurels, page 85. It says, we are headed for trouble if we do. Every day is a vision where we must carry the vision. Every day is a day where we must carry the vision of God's will into all our activities. So this is really for people who finish the first 9 steps and are trying to coast. So the big book again is clear. We need to keep doing steps 10, 11, and 12. In step 10, we clear away the wreckage of our day so that we can hear from God in step 11. And then in step 12, we help others get a relationship with God. And again, the 12th thing I have on my list, not working intensively with other compulsive eaters once we're through the steps. Working with others, the book says, gives us immunity, right? Like a vaccine, immunity. It's the only place in the big book where we're promised immunity. Like the illness can't touch us. We're protected by God. Number 13, not immediately repairing the damage we cause when we're inconsiderate or unhelpful, page 99. It says, of course, we're not always going to live up to this, but the big book says that even though we all fall much below the standard many times, we must try to repair the damage immediately, lest we pay the penalty by a spree. So again, if someone keeps like being nasty to her husband, and then picks up, and the sponsor says, well, let's start all the way at the beginning. It's like, well, no, like stop, you know, make amends to your husband, fix things in your house first. Number 14, imposing on people or lack of gratitude. It's on page 149. It says the right kind of man, the kind who recovers, will not want to be made a favorite. He will not impose, far from it. He will work like the devil and thank you to his dying day. So we don't impose on people. We don't ask people to do things for us that we could do for ourselves. And we are grateful. 100% of the time when I hang up the phone with my sponsor, I say thank you because I am grateful that she takes time to help me. Number 15, not knowing our personal temptations and limits. It's important to know where we can't go, either because we're too early in our recovery or we're just spiritually shaky that day, right? Our book tells us in that case, we work with another compulsive eater. Or if we're new in a recovery, we go find a way to be useful and practice self-sacrifice. It says a big temptation comes while traveling. So they say it's recommended to go to meetings while away, in order to lend a hand and at the same time avoid certain alluring distractions of the road. I say, be careful. A large percentage of relapses happen when people go on vacation. So work with your sponsor to determine how best to handle it. Number 16, not resigning from the debating society, having to be right about everything, politics, religion, other people's food plans, other people's values. The big book tells us we have stopped fighting anybody or anything. We have to. Number 17, idolatry. Okay, so this isn't mentioned specifically in the big book, but I think it's implied throughout. The definition of idolatry is putting a person, place, or thing ahead of God. On page 55, it says, deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. Isn't that great? Like when God created me, he gave me 2 lungs, 1 heart, 2 kidneys, and somewhere in there, the fundamental idea of himself. And it says, but it can be blocked by calamity, pomp, and worship of other things. The worship of other things are idols. So here's one way. making an idol out of our sponsor, like not being honest with our sponsor out of fear that we'll be dropped. It is more important to be honest, even if we end up with no sponsor, than to be dishonest with the world's best sponsor. Other things that it's easy to turn into idols are children, how our children are doing, our marriages, our jobs, having a baby, you know, getting a husband, things like that. We can identify our idols when we can fill in this blank. I won't be happy unless dot, dot, dot. And idolatry actually blocks us from God because it puts that person, place, or thing on the throne where God should be. And the solution is really to identify it, like see all the manifestations, share it with someone, and then ask God to remove it like any other defect. So how to get out of relapse or help a sponsee get out of relapse? The best thing a person can do is work with a qualified sponsor to help find out what caused relapse. Like, was there a gap in the steps? What is it? So that we can again find God, so that God can bring us out of it. It is my opinion, and I know opinions vary here, based on my reading of the Big Book, that a sponsor should not automatically drop a sponsee if the person eats compulsively, and should not assume that it's a first step problem and start over at step one. We've identified, like, I don't know, 17-ish possible causes of relapse, and said, like, review with her what happened. And by the way, I have this all on a podcast on A Vision for You called Pitfalls in Recovery. So you can have her listen to it and see, like, what pit she fell into. Like, is she working hard at self-sacrifice? Is she working hard at whatever step she's on? Dr. Bob said the people who relapse are those who start having a morning quiet time. So has she stopped that? On page 35 of the book, we're told the story of Jim, and it says, to his consternation, meaning he was baffled, he found himself drunk half a dozen times in rapid succession. What happened? It says, on each of these occasions, we worked with him, reviewing carefully what had happened, and just drop him. And there's only a few options. One, the person isn't willing to go to any lengths. Two, the person never went through the steps properly. Three, the person did go through the steps properly, but let up on something. It has to be one of those. Here are two things that don't cause relapse. Circumstances, remember I talked about that at the beginning, never the cause of relapse. And then two, sometimes someone will say they accidentally ate a trigger food. The key word is accidentally, as in an honest mistake. I remember when I was early on in recovery, you know, I drank diet soda and I had a can of diet Sprite, or so I thought. When I was finished, I saw that I had actually drunk a whole can of regular Sprite. You know what happened? Nothing. Right away, as soon as I realized it, I told my sponsor, you know, I made sure to, like, tell someone. Remember, our solution is being protected by God. I don't believe God would withdraw his protection for an honest mistake. But if we're dishonest with our food and eating something that we know leads to obsession and compulsion, the issue isn't the food, the issue is dishonesty. So once the cause of relapse is identified, then what? And by the way, the book says that out of the initial people who worked this program, 25% recovered right away. I think it was 25% recovered after some relapse. So there's a whole lot of us who wouldn't be here because, you know, there was a relapse first, or it took a while. But what do we do? So page 120 tells us to redouble our spiritual activities, which means work twice as hard on whatever step we're on. And then the Big Book says, same page, how to prevent another relapse. It says, if a repetition is to be prevented, place the problem along with everything else in God's hands. We examine all the areas where we're doing the program our own way and begin to do it God's way as best we can. We make sure we're honest, we're living up to our deals, we're clearing up resentments and fears, we make amends quickly when we harm others, we spend enough time in prayer and meditation so that we're on the continuous receiving end of God's love and power, and we help others to find and really fall in love with God, this God who supplies us like all the power and protection we need. I love those words. If a repetition is to be prevented, place the problem along with everything else in God's hands. I mean, I think like that's pretty crazy. God must have some pretty big hands, right? If he can handle all my problems, all your problems, all the whole world's problems, but he does. Like he's big enough to solve all our problems. Like I think solving our food problem is just his opening act. So again, I'm just going to close with this. The antidote to relapse and the key to ongoing recovery, I think, is summarized in one line on page 59. There is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. And with that, I will pass.
Thank you, Janet. Thank you, Jennifer. It's brilliant. Thank you. So much gem, so many nuggets of beautiful information. Thank you.